a very good day.
Today is Tuesday, October the 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. President Joe Biden sets out this week to promote his domestic agenda.
I'm telling you, we're going to get this done. It doesn't matter when. It doesn't matter whether it's in 6 minutes, 6 days, or 6 weeks. We're going to get it done.
And Facebook's social media platforms, including Instagram and WhatsApp, suffered widespread global outages on Monday.
It has serious impact on my work as a digital journalist who is supplying information to my people in Gambia and elsewhere.
And Melbourne, Australia has officially become the world's most locked down city since the pandemic began. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, U.S. President Joe Biden sets out this week to promote his domestic agenda. The president's Democratic Party is at odds with itself over two bills, a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package and a $3.5 trillion social spending bill. Michelle Quinn reports.
President Biden is under pressure this week to bring together two sides of his Democratic Party over the two massive spending bills that are linked and key to his domestic agenda.
I'm telling you, we're going to get this done. It doesn't matter when. It doesn't matter whether it's in 6 minutes, 6 days, or 6 weeks. We're going to get it done.
With bipartisan support, the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill for roads, bridges, and highways has passed the Senate. But in the House of Representatives, progressives in the Democratic Party say they won't approve that infrastructure bill until their party reaches a deal on the larger $3.5 trillion social spending package that includes money for initiatives such as the environment, education, and child care. Speaker Nancy Pelosi delayed the House vote on the infrastructure bill, angering some moderates. In a statement, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, a moderate Democrat from Arizona, called the delay inexcusable and a stunt to hold the infrastructure bill hostage to the larger measure. Republicans oppose the bigger spending plan, with Senator John Barrasso, a Republican from Wyoming, calling it this big government socialism reckless bill on Fox News Sunday. The Democrats, with a slim margin in the House and an evenly divided Senate, where Vice President Kamala Harris is needed to tip the balance in case of a tie, need to unite their party if they want to get the larger package passed. Senator Bernie Sanders is an independent from Vermont. He spoke on ABC's This Week.
Both of these bills are going forward in tandem. We've got to pass them both.
The House is out of session for the next 2 weeks. President Biden reportedly told Democrats that the bill's price tag will likely need to come down to $2.1 trillion. And some progressive Democrats say a potential compromise could include shortening the period the bill will fund. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Speaking to reporters, President Biden says Republicans need to get out of the way and let Democrats avoid a debt default.
Republicans say they will not do their part to avoid this needless calamity. So be it. But they need to stop playing Russian roulette with the U.S. economy.
U.S. President Joe Biden. The Pentagon is mandating COVID-19 vaccinations for civilian workers. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
The Defense Department is mandating COVID-19 vaccinations for all civilian workers by November 22nd. A memo signed by Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks says the new mandate is in line with the presidential directive issued last month requiring federal agencies to implement vaccine requirements. Under the schedule issued by the Pentagon, civilian workers getting the Pfizer vaccine must get their first dose by October 18th and their second dose by November 8th. Those getting the Moderna vaccine must get their first dose by October 11th. And their second dose by November 8th. And those getting the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine must do so by November 8th. Earlier this year, all members of the military were required to get vaccinated. Mike Gracia, Washington.
A Texas man charged in connection with the January Capitol riot was sentenced to jail time. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Prosecutors weren't recommending a sentence, but Matthew Mazzocco of San Antonio, Texas, got 45 days in jail. The judge blasted comparisons between the riot and the Black Lives Matter protest over racial injustice. Another federal judge who gave a defendant probation suggested the Justice Department was being too hard on the defendants when compared to the people arrested during protest after George Floyd's murder. Judge Tanya Chutkan in Texas said the people at the Capitol were trying to overthrow the government. Mazzocco pleaded guilty and spent 12 minutes inside the Capitol in January and posted a selfie on Facebook after the riot with the caption, "The Capitol is ours." Ed Donahue, Washington.
Family planning clinics are welcoming a federal rule reversal they say will help stabilize programs shaken by the pandemic, as well as political and legal battles over abortion. AP correspondent Jennifer King has more.
2 days after thousands of abortion rights supporters marched to the steps of the Supreme Court, the Biden administration is reversing a Trump-era ban on abortion referrals by family planning clinics. The Department of Health and Human Services says the new regulation will go back to the way it ran under the Obama administration when clinics were able to refer women seeking abortions to a provider. They estimate the number of customers served by family planning clinics fell by 40% under the Trump policy. A taxpayer-funded program known as Title X makes more than $250 million a year of available to clinics to provide birth control and basic health care services, mainly to low-income women. Jennifer King, Washington.
Voice of America.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp are at least partially reconnected to the global internet on Monday afternoon, nearly 6 hours into an outage that paralyzed the social media platform. Security experts say the disruption could be the result of an internal mistake, though sabotage by an insider was not ruled out. So how did the outage affect users in Africa, where millions depend on it for their businesses and it's a primary form of communication in many areas? Sene Marena is the editor-in-chief of Alkamba Times, a digital news platform targeting Gambians at home and in the diaspora. He uses the platform to send out news updates to his readers. He joins me from Seattle in Washington.
So, Sene, thank you very much for joining us. When did you find out about the outage, and how did you find out?
I wake up as early as 5 a.m., and then I start receiving messages from my family back home in Gambia, West Africa. Moments, an hour later, I couldn't reply, neither can I send messages back to those who were texting me. So I had to restart my phone twice because it's very unusual. I noticed it first from my WhatsApp messaging. Then I went back to my Facebook. I checked it. The Facebook couldn't load. I had to call my operator, that is T-Mobile, to ask them whether my internet has been cut down or my internet has been shut down. But right. I realized it has nothing to do with my internet. It has to do with Facebook, global Facebook shutdown.
So, Sene, how did it affect your work? How often do you use these platforms?
It has seriously affected my work because my social media platforms, that is the Facebook, the Twitter, and the WhatsApp, are all linked to my website. The moment I publish my stories, it feeds my social media platform. So today, I have a very important story you may hear about. U.S. government, you know, confiscating the property of the former president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh. So I had an interview with activists who were calling for the U.S. seizure of those properties. So I published that story, but I couldn't have traffic. I was like, what's going on? Normally, if I write stories like that, I get a lot of traffic. People will be reading. But I realized no one was reading because my traffic was generated on this social media platform. That's Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp, you know.
Of the three platforms, which one do you think had the most impact? Which of the three is the most used in Gambia or in West Africa in general?
Generally, Facebook and WhatsApp are the most widely used platforms.
What do they use this platform for?
No, they use Facebook to communicate with families and friends. Others, including myself, use it for business. And WhatsApp, you know, has been a great medium of communication in the Gambia. If you remember 2016 presidential election in the Gambia, WhatsApp was the platform that politicians, ordinary electorate, communicate with, you know, they communicate among themselves to sell their messages or to receive information from, you know, political parties. So WhatsApp is widely used in the Gambia. I can say it's more widely used than Facebook, because even those our grandmas and our grandpas can record their voice or listen to these audio messages, just a click. So it has serious impact on my work as a digital journalist who is supplying information to my people in Gambia and elsewhere.
That was saying MK Marena, the editor-in-chief of Alkamba Times, a digital news platform. The outage was the second blow to the social media giant after a whistleblower on Sunday accused the company of repeatedly prioritizing profit over clamping down on hate speech and misinformation. OPEC Plus countries say they will stick to an existing agreement for a gradual increase in oil output, sending crude prices to three-year highs and adding to inflationary pressures that consuming nations fear will derail an economic recovery from the pandemic. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, Russia, and their allies, known as OPEC Plus, have faced calls from big consumers such as the United States and India for extra supplies after oil prices surged more than 50% this year. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the Biden administration wants to keep prices at the pump down.
We are going to continue to use every tool at our disposal, even as we're not a member of OPEC, to ensure we can keep gas prices down for the American public.
Jen Psaki, White House Press Secretary. The U.S. Supreme Court returned to the courtroom on Monday after an absence of nearly 19 months due to the coronavirus. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
We will hear argument first this morning in original case 143, Mississippi against Tennessee.
Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts announcing the first case on the docket this morning. Eight of the nine justices took to the bench for the first arguments of the new term. Justice Brett Kavanaugh is participating remotely from his home after testing positive for COVID-19 last week. Kavanaugh was vaccinated in January, and the court says he's showing no symptoms. The other justices also have all been vaccinated. The public can now listen live to the proceedings, a change made during the pandemic. Live courtroom audio is available via a link on the court's website. Mike Hempen, Washington.
Voice of America.
Jordan's royal palace has hit back against allegations made by the Pandora Papers that King Abdullah, a U.S. partner in the Middle East, used offshore accounts to spend more than $100 million on 14 luxury homes in the United States and United Kingdom. Analysts say that allegations come at a sensitive time as the country battles mounting economic hardship due to COVID-19 and political instability from a presumed attempted coup plot earlier this year. For VOA, Del Gavlak reports from Amman.
A Jordanian royal palace statement issued Monday said recent news reports on properties owned by King Abdullah contained inaccuracies and distorted and exaggerated the facts. It said the residences are no secret and are not unusual nor improper, as they have been used for both official and private visits. It added that there are critical security considerations that prevent divulging His Majesty's and his family's places of residence, saying that revealing such addresses constituted a flagrant security breach and a threat to the monarch and his family. The Pandora report said Abdullah made property purchases over the past decade at a time when foreign aid was flowing into the country in part to tackle a refugee crisis. During that time frame, in 2018, Jordan saw anti-government protests with demonstrators demanding an end to corruption and poverty. The report said there have also been attempts by the authorities to crack down on hidden wealth, designed to help staunch the flow of an estimated $800 million a year out of the country. Political analyst Amar Al-Sabaili at the University of Jordan told VOA that such allegations come at a sensitive time as the country is grappling with economic and political challenges amid the COVID-19 pandemic.
It's come now in a moment where the king was trying to restore his image and trying to play a regional role, maybe connecting with Syria, Iraq. He went to Washington. So it comes in a very delicate moment as well, because it brings back things today, like the issue of corruption, spending public money, how is the king seen from his people. This is challenging because the Jordanians are suffering economically. Taxations are very high, electricity. There's no decent services anymore. Still to face the post-COVID challenges, unemployment, frustration, etc.
Another Jordanian analyst, Labib Kamhawi, told the Washington Post there are so many economic challenges and problems confronting the Jordanian people. A normal Jordanian citizen is running a constant deficit in his budget and can hardly make ends meet, he said, adding that allegations of secret lavish homes would fuel anger in the country and instability. DLA Piper, a London law office representing the king, issued a statement saying that Abdullah had not at any point misused public monies or made any use whatsoever of the proceeds of aid or assistance intended for public use. Since the 1950s, Jordan has received more than $22 billion in aid from the U.S., with $1.5 billion alone last year, making it the third largest recipient of U.S. assistance after Israel and Afghanistan. U.S. officials told the Washington Post that this funding is carefully tracked and they have seen no evidence that any money was diverted from its intended purpose. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
And Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is among the world leaders named in the leaked documents dubbed the Pandora Papers as hiding secret family wealth overseas. The papers show the Kenyattas hid tens of millions of dollars in offshore and shell companies, even as he urged officials to declare their own wealth. The revelation of hidden assets, while not necessarily illegal, has called into question the sincerity of the Kenyan president's calls for transparency in the fight against corruption. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Kenyatta family was one of the hundreds of companies and families around the world reported to be holding large sums of wealth outside their home country. According to the report from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the ICIJ, President Uhuru Kenyatta and his family have accumulated more than $30 million in wealth, including a property in London. The president and six members of his family were linked to at least a dozen offshore companies. The law in Kenya prohibits any public state officer from holding or running a bank account outside the jurisdiction of Kenya without the blessings of the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Agency. Constitutional lawyer Bob Mukangi says it will be difficult to know whether the Kenyattas have declared their wealth, since such information is not shared with the public.
The Public Officers Ethics Act, which demands that public officers, state officers, declare their wealth, not only elected officers, but also appointed officers, that they must declare their wealth. And this is done annually or at election time. And must be updated. The only challenge with this provision is that the wealth declaration is not made public. So, yes, the different personalities, gaining entry to appointive or elective office in Kenya do make the declarations, but it is difficult to track and trace.
The ICIJ uncovered 11.9 million files from companies that created offshore accounts. It is said wealthy corporations, business people and politicians like to use Panamanian foundations to hide money because they don't have to reveal their identities to the government there. According to the International Monetary Fund, tax havens such as this cost governments between $400 and $800 billion every year in lost tax revenue from companies and individuals. The loss of the revenue makes it harder for government to provide citizens with basic services like running water, electricity, health, and education. Wanjeri Nderu is a social justice activist based in Nairobi. She has planned dozens of protests in Kenya about the misuse of public funds. She said the citizens are experiencing economic hardship due to such vices.
We as Kenyans are being overtaxed already because of the kind of theft we are experiencing. We are finding that the president and his cronies have sat down and come up with measures to even tax us further. We have seen the highest price of fuel in this country is what we have right now. People are not affording basic things. And then you sit down and go through the Pandora Papers expose, and you realize that the same people who are stealing from us cannot even trust their own systems with the loot.
According to a Kenya newspaper report Monday, Kenyatta said the Pandora Papers will lift the veil of secrecy for those who cannot explain their wealth. He said he will respond fully to the report when he returns from Ethiopia, where he's attending Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's inauguration. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And in other news, defense lawyers are questioning the very legitimacy of the Vatican Tribunal, where 10 people are on trial on finance-related charges. In motions ahead of the resumption of the trial today, they are arguing their clients can't get a fair trial in an absolute monarchy, where the Pope has already intervened in the case and where prosecutors have failed to turn over key evidence. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. A European and Japanese joint mission to explore Mercury recently made its first flyby by the innermost planet. Rick Pantaleo tells us more in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency and Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency's joint BEPI Colombo mission recently made its first of six flybys of Mercury. According to an ESA press release, BEPI Colombo got as close as 199 kilometers above Mercury's surface during the flyby. The spacecraft is made up of three parts: the Mercury Planetary Orbiter, the Mercury Magnospheric Orbiter, and the Mercury Transport Module. Multiple flybys are needed to help BEPI Colombo overcome the sun's gravity as it reaches its orbital positions at the planet in December 2025. Once at Mercury, the two orbiters will separate from the transport module, with one on a shorter orbital track and the other following a longer elliptical orbit. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Melbourne, Australia has officially become the world's most locked down city since the pandemic began. Residents have endured 245 days of stay-at-home orders, surpassing Buenos Aires, Argentina. From Sydney, Phil Masser reports.
Melbourne, the Victoria state capital, is now in its sixth COVID-19 lockdown. This one began more than 80 days ago on August 5. To date, the longest shutdown lasted for 111 days between July and October last year. Stay-at-home orders were first issued in Australia's second biggest city in late March 2020 to curb the spread of infections. Many businesses have been forced to close, while millions of people have had to work and study from home, and nighttime curfews have also been imposed. Opposition politicians in Victoria have sharply criticised the state government over the length and intensity of the lockdowns. But the authorities have insisted they had no choice but to repeatedly take drastic action because of the slow initial pace of Australia's national vaccination rollout, due in part to supply problems. The state's chief health officer, Brett Sutton, says the tough measures have saved lives.
I mean, it's been an awful crisis for the world, for Melbourne, more than any other place in Australia. We have to face the crisis that's in front of us. It's a reality that we are lagging amongst OECD countries for the vaccination rollout. That is the vulnerability that means that you have to have a lockdown to manage potentially catastrophic numbers and catastrophic numbers of deaths.
1,377 new locally acquired coronavirus cases and four fatalities were recorded in Victoria Monday. But even as Delta variant infections continue to surge, authorities are pressing ahead with plans to lift lockdown restrictions on October 26, when 70% of the population is fully vaccinated. The current inoculation rate is about 54%. Canberra and other parts of eastern Australia remain in lockdown. Sydney has had more than 100 days of stay-at-home orders since restrictions were imposed in late June. Its lockdown is expected to be lifted on October 11, when vaccination levels reach 70%. Australia has recorded 111,000 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. 1,300 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A U.S. district court has ordered for the forfeiture of the $3.5 million Potomac, Maryland home belonging to the exiled Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh. Jammeh has been accused of stealing Gambian taxpayers' money to buy the property. He's been living in exile in Equatorial Guinea since January of 2017, pandering by reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The exiled Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh has lost his Potomac mansion. A U.S. court has ruled that he secured the property illegally with stolen Gambian taxpayers' money. Pasamba Jau is a member of the Washington, D.C.-based Democratic Union of Gambian Activists, DUGA, a non-governmental organization that has been engaged in promoting democracy in the Gambia. Jau has been over the years leading protest marches at Jammeh's seized Potomac home.
I am absolutely happy that finally the long arm of justice has caught up with Yahya Jammeh. We all know that he bought that property in September of 2010 for an amount of $3.5 million, which today's equivalency to in Gambian dollars would be about $175 million. And we know how poor our people are. And Jammeh could not have bought that property from his salary, even if he had been president for the next 50 years.
The judgment followed the defendant's failure to respond to the plaintiff's lawsuit despite the issuance of a notice to them. Now Jammeh's Potomac home is to be forfeited according to the court.
That finally justice prevailed in this instance and hope that this property would be sold and the money returned to the rightful owners, the poor people of the Gambia.
Jammeh in power for 22 years amid accusations of committing gross human rights violations ranging from murder, rape and torture of political opponents. The court says Jammeh used trustees to purchase the property. It was registered in the name of his daughter.
He used MYJ trustee, which is Mariam Yahya Jammeh trustee, because when he bought the compound, he was trying to hide it. But we were able to locate it. We were able to put one and one together. And we were lucky to really have found it, because this whole thing was to hide it from the Gambian people.
Jau says Jammeh had over the years portrayed himself as a pan-Africanist with a track record of fanning anti-Western bashings, accusing the West of looting the continent's resources in the name of colonization. He couldn't understand how the same Jammeh could turn around to hide Gambia's stolen wealth into the United States.
You will remember, and you know this very well, that here is Yahya Jammeh, who used to claim to be the biggest pan-Africanist, that he was opposed to corruption and his endless attacks of the West. So I think it would have been embarrassing for him, for people to know that with all that talk, he was interested in buying a house in one of the most affluent neighborhoods in the United States, which is Potomac. He used a trustee to buy it, to hide his loot, but definitely Gambians, especially the activists in the United States, did a great job in unraveling that.
The U.S. government has imposed a travel ban on Jammeh, his wife, and immediate family members. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day ahead.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past.
or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 15.